start using cutting-edge Warp Speed 5G technology with your cell phone. Let me tell you about my friends at mobilemobile.io. They have an ultra-fast 4G LTE and 5G network that covers 99% of Americans. So they've got you covered everywhere. Think about it for a moment. You have the opportunity to take a test drive for 10 days with unlimited talk, text, and premium data. What is premium data? Premium data is an allotment of a cellular data that you receive from a higher priority on the network. You won't get throttled like you will with some of those, well,
non-brand
service providers. To find out more information, all you have to do is go to mobilemobile.io. That's mobilemobile.io to start your 10-day free trial. Welcome our newest sponsor to the podcast, IssuesWithCredit.com. IssuesWithCredit.com is a community of people who are together that want to talk to you about credit. If you're having issues with credit, go to IssuesWithCredit.com. Right now, they're running a one-time sale. If you type in discount code BETA, that's B as in Bravo, E as in Echo, T as in Tom, A as in Alpha, it will give you a 50% discount off of whatever listed prices are there. IssuesWithCredit.com, a 13th hour solution venture.
Broadcasting live from the Safety FM studios in Orlando, Florida, here is your host, Dr. Jay Allen, on Safety FM.
This episode of the broadcast and the podcast is brought to you by Safety Focus Moment. They're consultants that want to help you get the safety culture you've been looking for. For more information, go to safetyfocusmoment.com.
Hello and welcome to Safety FM. This is Jay Allen. How are you doing today? My microphone stand over here is making noise. Sorry about that. Anyway, so how are you guys doing? How's everything going? I hope you're having a fantastic time. This is this time of the year where it starts getting so lovely here in the glorious state of Florida. Oh yes, that's where I'm at right now at this particular moment as I'm doing this recording. But that's not important. Are things going the way that you're wanting them to? Because that's the important part. I always look at this that, you know, when I start off with these conversations, it's so awkward because number one, I'm talking to myself. And number two, then I'm planning on you to listen to this. But that's the funny part. But let me not bore you with that information. That's always what I call the quote-unquote behind-the-scenes information. Well, today we have an interesting conversation. I have a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Christian Harris, and he's from Slip Safety Services, and they're based out of the Greater London, United Kingdom area. So Christian and his organization, they're slip safety specialists, and they go into organization to lower potential risk and try to see if they can reduce accidents in regards of giving people information about floor safety. It's a really interesting thing that they do there. And I want you to listen to this conversation here today on what Christian has to say about what they do with their service, Slip Safety Services. So enjoy the interview here today on Safety FM.
You are listening to a renowned safety expert, Dr. Jay Allen, on Safety FM.
Changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time. Join the fun on social media and find us on Facebook at Safety FM.
So I guess I'll have to ask you starting off, why did you want to come on to this disaster that we call Safety FM?
Well, I've heard very good things. Mike Saddam actually recommended I get in touch with you guys and see whether there might be any interest in doing a show. Mike and I have got a show booked in, and we had a very good conversation. But that was, as you'll know probably from his show, it's kind of more around human behavior rather than specifically around safety. Mm-hmm. And we had a very good conversation together. But I think there's maybe some opportunity to a kind of a similar audience on the same network to get into maybe a bit more of the nitty-gritty around the health and safety parts of what we do.
Well, you've been doing slip safety services here for about the last year. What got you involved on that? Was there a story that got you to that perspective, or how did it come about?
Well, I've been in the kind of slip safety arena for coming up to 10 years now. So I was before that a business consultant, sort of general business consultant, and looking at banks and private equity companies and advising them on whether they should invest in different businesses and helping smaller businesses to grow and things like that. But I kind of wanted to get my hands a bit dirty, should we say, in a real business.
Well, hold on. That's one heck of a flip. Let's just be realistic. Yeah. You're going from helping businesses and, hey, let's grow and build a portfolio here to all of a sudden, hey, let's do safety where there's a lot of cost normally involved in it. That's different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got an interesting background before that because I was involved in, well, I'm still kind of a bit involved in online poker, and I'm quite a keen poker player. So that's all about, odds and probabilities and making the right decision based on the information available to you and so on. So to some extent, there's a kind of an overlap there with safety. But also when I was kind of leaving that previous job, I wanted to kind of get my hands dirty a bit, but also my boss at the time suggested that I do a list of 10 kind of things I wanted to get out of a role or a career or whatever it might be. And don't write down you want to earn $10 million a year or anything silly like that, but do sort of, attainable, realistic things. And one of the things on that list was actually I wanted to do something that would make a big difference in the world in a kind of altruistic sense. And so when I kind of became aware of the issues around people slipping, tripping and falling, and the fact that it has been an ongoing issue and it never seems to particularly improve. I mean, there's statistics in the US, for example, which suggest if anything, it's proportionally getting worse. There's an opportunity to achieve some of the other things I wanted to do, but also to achieve that kind of key thing that I wanted, which was to try and produce something positive in the world.
So as you're going down this path, was there something that happened in your life that caused you to want to do this? Or was it just, this is the opportunity that I see, or we'll say, quote unquote, niche, as they say in the consulting world, in regards to this is what you want to move forward?
It was more of the latter, to be honest. I mean, I was looking at other things as well that were, not in the safety world, but I was kind of really drawn to this. And I think if you ask most people, they've got a story either personal to themselves or somebody that's quite close to them, or, certainly within, say, a second degree connection and using the LinkedIn parlance, but somebody they'll know of that's had one of these accidents, whether it's led to an injury or not. So it does kind of bring it home. I mean, before Christmas, a very good friend of mine slipped over and she broke her ankle in three places. And she was actually 32 weeks pregnant at the time. So she had a really horrendous time because of a slip in a playground where she was with her son, who's kind of four. That really brought it all really in terms of somebody very close to me that I know really well and, really suffered as a result of what I would say would be a very much avoidable accident. I think the vast, vast, vast majority of these accidents are avoidable.
So on this particular one, being as it's so close to the chest here, did you do an investigation or do research afterwards and say this is how you came to the determination that it was avoidable?
No, I haven't done any formal investigation. She obviously reached out to me quite soon afterwards and said, "Oh, what had happened and what did I think and so on." So I pointed her in the direction of some lawyers initially because obviously she's entitled to seek some compensation. But where this actually happened, it's quite local to us. And there are reports of it being a fairly frequent thing that happens in that particular playground. So people have fallen there before.
So definitely pattern recognition on there. So as you start going through this, you decide that this is going to be the one that you go with. So this is close to the chest. You decide that you're going to go into the slip and fall industry. What kind of research do you do prior to getting into it that you go, this is for sure the one I want to do?
Well, I mean, over in here in the UK, there's the HSE, which is like the government executive health and safety body, publish statistics every year in terms of workplace accidents and other kinds of accidents. And if you look at the statistics both there and all sorts of others that I've come across, whether it be from insurers to cleaning industry or whatever, you know, they all say slips, trips and falls is pretty much universally the biggest category of accident. So in the UK, for example, we have over 300,000 admissions to hospital every year, which are caused by slips, and then more from trips and falls, and 1.5 million hospital overnight stays as well. Obviously, where you guys are in the States, the numbers are a lot bigger because you've got a much bigger population. But that's the biggest cause of people going into the emergency room here.
I live in Florida, so there's a lot of weird things that happen here. And I don't mean that in a bad way, just kind of due to the age demographic in the area. Mm. Take it however you want. So,
yeah, no, exactly. If you look at the insurance world will publish stuff as well. And it's kind of been, I mean, I feel as if the awareness has risen in the last coming on for a decade that I've been involved, but there's still a long way to go. I mean, we do a lot of talks to insurance companies or health and safety professionals or cleaning and maintenance professionals or whatever. And if you show them a picture of a pendulum test, which is what the HSE and the law requires you to use here to do slip assessment of friction levels of floors, and you ask them, you know, how many people know what that is, it's only ever 5% or 10% of people that actually recognize it. So there's still a long way to go in terms of awareness. But if you look at the overall accident statistics over the last, say, 30 years, you know, certainly in the UK, which is where I'm most familiar, you know, the overall accidents are going down and down and down. But this category kind of perpetuates, and there's a few reasons for that.
So let's say, for instance, hypothetically, I'm having slip, trip, and fall issues inside of my organization, and I'm interested in doing business with your organization. How do they, number one, normally get in contact with you? And then number two, what does the process look like?
So we have quite a good network of partnerships with insurers and brokers and floor suppliers and FM companies and managing agents and so on and so forth. So it could be that somebody has been recommended to speak to me and my business through one of those partners that we have, or it could be, you know, a bit of Google searching. So we do a lot of content stuff. So we tend to rank fairly well on Google because of the content stuff we're doing, or you know, any other sort of organic way of finding out. Quite active on LinkedIn, for example, do content most days, so that does generate inquiries for us. In terms of the process, what we try and get people to do first is a kind of a digital diagnostic that we've developed, which is called a slip safety scorecard. So that basically is a kind of 40 question test or survey, for want of a better term, and it's just a series of kind of yes no questions, but that's focused in really around the six factors or the six sources of why somebody slips. And we give them a personalized report based on the answers they give, which are specific to their business, their building or whatever it might be. And then they get a score, they get to benchmark themselves against best practice, and they get kind of advice on each of the six areas on where they can improve. And that's a good way of kind of starting the journey, because it starts to get them to think about it kind of holistically and a bit more depth. One of the big challenges, I think, is that people are aware of the problem of people falling over, but they tend to have a kind of a helicopter view of things. So they would say, you know, I would hear all the time comments like, well, I put a yellow floor sign out, what more could I do? Or the floor was wet, it was bound to be slippery. Or, you know, all sorts of kind of sweeping generalizations like that. So the diagnostic tool we've developed helps people to start to try and get under the skin of this a little bit more, into a bit more depth, and then kind of clarify their thinking. So that's the first step that we try and get people to go on to.
Normally from that particular point on, do you have it pretty much set up through an insurance company/affiliate that's how they're getting the sourcing to you, or do you have people out of the ordinary call you directly and go, because of your content that they either found on Google or the LinkedIns of the world, as you were saying earlier, and that's how they contact you? Is there kind of like an intermediary, or they just go directly to the source?
We like it if people just come randomly directly to us, and we always ask the question, well, how did you hear about us? And it really varies, so which is good. But we've certainly set up kind of strategically to work with the partners we've got, particularly in the insurance space, because if we can work alongside the insurer, then there are all sorts of exciting things like, you know, part funding for work, or premium rebates, and so on and so forth. So if we can have a kind of a joined up approach on a project like this, then it typically has a good financial benefit to the client, as well as, you know, enabling us to gather more data and stuff.
So normally during the process, where do you see your ideal client? What is your ideal client when they come in? Would this be in construction phase? Will this be post accident? Or when you visualize your perfect avatar, how does that look?
The ideal client wouldn't be post-accident, because we want people to be proactive, not reactive, although realistically it does tend to be an accident.
You're in safety. You know how this goes the majority of the time.
Exactly. The ideal client for us, I suppose, would be somebody that is looking to try and understand the subject a bit more and recognizes that they've got a risk and potentially a problem, and has, you know, a keenness to do something to try and improve the situation. So quite often when people are in that kind of trouble mode and they're reacting to stuff, you know, they might say, oh, you know, we'll spend money on this, we'll do that, but actually not really perhaps solve the fundamental issues. So we like to really look at things, if we can, in a thorough way, in a pragmatic way, try to really get to the root cause issues and help people to kind of make a fundamental change to the way they're operating, and therefore the risk, and therefore the amount of people getting hurt, and therefore the cost that they're spending. So it could be any sector, and it could be in any phase in terms of... it's great to get involved pre-construction, because if you can put the right floor surface in to start with, then you've got a good chance of keeping it that way. If you put an ice skating rink onto a swimming pool side, you're going to have problems. So it's good to try and design out issues from the start. But most of the time we're dealing with existing floors in existing buildings that have been down for, you know, years normally. And it could be that there's been an ongoing issue, or it could be that something's changed. You know, maybe the cleaning regime or the floor has just worn away over years, which does obviously happen. In terms of sectors, it could be any sector. I mean, we do a lot of work in hospitality and leisure. So people with swimming pools, leisure centres, hotel bathrooms, both in terms of the floor, but also the bathtubs and the shower trays, kitchens. And then we do a fair bit of work in sort of manufacturing facilities as well, where there's some quite different challenges, but equally some interesting control measures. You know, footwear, for example, is a great control measure in a factory, but you can't control the footwear that people are wearing in a Burger King if they're coming to buy a burger, for example.
Right.
So, you know, we look at it in a fair bit of depth. The process typically is the same, but the answers are going to vary by sector, and that's why we do tend to do more work in some sectors than others.
Safety FM, changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
So right now, if you were on the exclusive list, you got the information letting you know that we were running a contest for the exclusive list members only. And what did we give away? What we gave away was exactly one ad for the middle of the podcast for someone to be able to promote whatever item they wanted. So right now, I have the opportunity of referencing who actually won the contest. And the winner is Isaac Robinson. You're the winner of the contest. We'll be getting in contact with you shortly to see what exactly you want to promote here on Safety FM. Thanks for being a listener. And if you're interested in joining our exclusive list, come to safetyfm.com. Go right there to that first page, enter your name and your email address, and they'll put you directly onto our exclusive list. Thank you for being a listener. And continue enjoying Safety FM at safetyfm.com, safetyfm.live, or any of the apps that are available, and that can be found at the App Store, the Google Play Store, and the Amazon Alexa skills. And we are back with Christian Harris here on Safety FM. So right now, if you're going through this whole process, and so we start doing business together, and all of a sudden, boom, your organization comes in, who is your point of contact normally? Because I'm assuming this is not going to be the safety manager. Is this like kind of like the building maintenance person, or is this kind of somebody else?
Yeah, we have to kind of touch on a lot of different people, because if you look at the control measures that you need to really solve this problem properly, it includes the design, it includes the cleaning and maintenance, it obviously includes the safety, it includes risk management or insurance or whoever. And so therefore, sometimes in these kind of bigger organizations who work in silos, they don't often talk to each other or communicate very well. That can be a bit of a challenge. Typically, we get in touch with the health and safety manager first, because they have the biggest identified need. But they often don't have the budget to be able to do things, or the authority necessarily to change things. So we often will kind of go in there to the health and safety manager first, try and help them to understand the issues themselves, so they can almost coach their colleagues through the process a little bit and have a bit more depth behind what they're saying, give them some ammunition in terms of testing and scientific kind of quantification of the floor surfaces or the footwear or whatever it might be. But then we normally end up having to speak with somebody in either insurance or finance or facilities or whatever it might be, depending on the exact recommendations we make. We always try to get involved with the insurance buyer in some way, because, as I said earlier, if we can get the insurance company along for the journey, then that can really pay dividends, both in terms of reducing the initial cost for the client, but also capturing data, so that over time, you know, if you can show through data analysis that your accident rates are falling, you can demonstrate that to your insurer, your premiums are going to come down as well.
Well, as you always know, when you start doing any kind of investment into a group in regards of trying to get some of these things put into the system, what's going to end up taking place is somebody's going to ask automatically, what's the return on investment? And it's kind of difficult to prove the accident that never happens because you were able to make it not occur.
So yeah, that's
how often do you have that conversation?
Well, we pretty much always have to have the return investment conversation in one way or another. I think people are increasingly clued up and understanding of the overall cost of accidents now. So I think a few years ago, I can think of one of the big cleaning and facilities management companies, for example, that we work with. And a few years ago, as the head of safety and risk said to me only a week or so ago, we never would have got any traction with them because they were just solely focused on, you know, this costs X, this costs Y, which one's cheaper. They're not looking at things in a joined up way. Whereas now they are looking at a kind of a board level at risk management, and they're seeing the examples of where if they can have good practice or the reverse, that's having a material effect on their P&L. So he gave me a story of one regional division, I think, of the business. And he was at a kind of an end of year management meeting, and the divisional director stood up and sort of was very passionately talking about all the successes they'd had this year with contract wins and brand building and so on and so forth, and profit and all that. And my contact basically stood up and said, well, that's fantastic, and I don't want to diminish any of those achievements. However, had your staff not turned up to work at all this year, we would have made more money than what you did actually make by operating the business, because we had so many claims, but actually the cost of the claims, which is a hidden cost as far as this divisional director is concerned, because he doesn't see that in his P&L. You know, his P&L showed a profit, but actually, if you overlay the insurance costs, they were making a loss. So I think people are kind of getting more and more cognizant of that and really understanding that better. I think the role of the risk manager or risk director in a bigger business is helping to draw that together at the kind of board level, whereas before, I think people would look at their P&L, they'd look at insurance as a line item. They wouldn't think about any of these hidden costs. And I mean, we've done some research recently which suggests that the true cost of an accident is about 10 to 12 times the actual insurance claim cost. This was some research we did with very targeted on health and safety professionals in the UK. So, you know, your £10,000 claim is actually costing the business maybe £120,000, but that's kind of hidden. So you don't need many of those accidents to wipe out a lot of profit.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of times people don't take into effect the items that you're referencing. They don't reference depending on how the organization is structured, where on the back end, you could be losing X, Y, and Z. What it's going to cost regards of, because most companies, and I'm just saying, depending on what format of safety they're using, is we have to retrain the whole organization because we had X problem. So if you do that and you put that into the cost, and I'm saying most organizations, not that I agree with that, that's the passion or the pattern in regards of doing it, but that's where a lot of those costs come about. And then you have to start factoring into, it's an emotional event, especially if you had something that occurred. So for the next 6 weeks, most organizations, that will be the focus. This is going to be the focus across the board. And, you know, we call it flavor of the week. And that's what they're going to be focusing on. And we're going to retrain. We're going to bring this in. We're going to bring that in. But how do you make it built into the culture is really what it comes down to. And of course, that's a whole other conversation. But it becomes one of those things that's so interesting on how do we get from reactionary to actually doing it prior to. But it sounds like you're bringing a lot of information to that C-level suite that they normally don't think about in the first place.
Yeah, we try to do, I mean, we try to engage with all the levels of the organization because in my experience, if you speak to a cleaner, for example, they are often a little bit undervalued, but they are probably seen in maybe a negative light in some ways. But actually, they play quite a fundamental role, both in terms of safety, but also customer experience, you know, two key drivers of profitability if you look at things in the round. So we try to connect with people on all levels of the organization. And I mean, I think that the at the C level, it's kind of more around return on investment and figures and finances and stuff. But actually, lower down, it something a bit more emotive can be quite effective. I mean, I was at a site today and we looked at a few kitchens. This is a kind of a theme park, and the slip resistance of the floors there varied quite significantly, even though they had the same flooring in place, and therefore their cleaning regime is clearly different in different kitchens. And the guy, the safety manager, was kind of getting a bit frustrated and why can't we do this properly and so on. And I said, well, I think, you know, to me, it's about the fact that people aren't realizing that they're looking at it as just cleaning and they're probably seeing it as not very important. Whereas actually, if you could explain to them that by cleaning worse, they're actually putting their colleagues, who are their friends, and themselves at more risk. Whereas if they clean better, they're putting themselves and their colleagues at less risk. That might be enough to kind of get them to think a bit more carefully about it and try and do it a bit more thoroughly.
So do you actually go in and really present this in regards to where you can assist the organization, help and change on the way that their mindset is?
Yeah, that's part of what we do. I mean, a lot of what we do is kind of practical stuff. So, and again, that's where I think some of the issues around this category of accident occur, because people will take quite a theoretical perspective of it and think about, you know, signage, and there's tons of training out there. You know, we'll train you on how to reduce your slips, trips and falls. What we actually do is get down in the nitty-gritty, actually go in, visit sites, talk to the people that are out there on the shop floor, looking after the floors, cleaning the floors, whatever, and then try to make kind of step changes in really how their floors are performing through treating them or cleaning them better or whatever, and then try and make that stick through maintenance and monitoring. And that's got a kind of secondary benefit, because if you can prove that you're monitoring things and evidence it, then in the event of a claim that does come through, you've got a, quite a good defensibility perspective. I'm not saying it's easy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not in a mansion in the Bahamas, flying in my private jet. So it can't be as easy as that. But I think, knowing about how to engage with different people in different ways within, I'm sure this is quite clear to many listeners, but you've got to be able to do that differently to a CEO than to a cleaner, or to a hotel manager, or to a restaurant manager, or whatever. But try and get the key messages out kind of succinctly. And I think everybody is, as I said earlier, everybody's attuned to this kind of harm piece. You know, everybody wants to go home at the end of the day's work, or at the end of a visit to a shopping mall or a restaurant or whatever, whether they're working or going there on recreation. They want to be able to go home at the end of the day safely. So, you know, that will always get a response from people. If you can overlay the financial stuff and actually show that it can be a positive for your financial position, not just a cost, then you know, that theoretically should be a bit of a no-brainer.
Right. And you have to understand, of course, most organizations are always going to look at safety in regards to something that's cost, because it's not generating revenue. But that's one of those things, on depending on what kind of aspect your organization is and how far down the path they are inside of their safety journey, as I like to call it. Because some organizations will look at a value, some of them don't. It just really depends on where you're at. But I think what you're bringing to the forefront in the UK is so much good information in regards of, hey, let's get in at the planning stages, and let's see what we can implement. And this is what we're seeing across the industries and how we can change. I mean, it's just so smart on the way that you're doing it.
Yeah, and we try to bring it home to organizations around that profitability point. So there's a big supermarket here called Tesco, who are a multinational, and they're massive, but their business, just like a Walmart or a Coles in Australia or whoever, is quite a low margin business. And if you take the average cost of a slip claim in the UK, which is more or less £10,000, and you look at if you were in the position of being Tesco with your margin, how many bunches of bananas do you need to sell in order to make £10,000 of profit? Have you got any idea?
No clue whatsoever.
A quarter of a million bunches of bananas.
Oh, wow.
So if you can frame it in that way, then that will get attention to, you know, the right sorts of people potentially, or at least you've got a chance then of, you know, of having a conversation. If I could say to the MD of Tesco, I've got a way of ensuring you sell a quarter of a million more bunches of bananas every month, I suspect he'd be very interested. Well, you know, somebody quite senior would be interested in that. So therefore, why would they not be interested in trying to have the same benefit to their bottom line, but by doing smarter safety?
Well, it's exactly like you said. It's all about the presentation and how it's presented, depending on who inside of the organization you're speaking with. But that's a great aspect on the way of doing it, because you're going to all of a sudden get that trigger event where they're going to be like, okay, I'm definitely interested in what you have to say next.
Yeah. And then it's all about proving it and, you know, all the fun stuff. But that's the battle is getting through the door sometimes. To have those conversations with the right kinds of people. You can sometimes end up in a meeting with somebody quite senior, and they're sort of saying, why am I spending my time in a meeting talking about how to clean a floor? Then you have to sort of remind them that there's a bigger story here, which is going to be a positive for them. One of the other things I think that's a challenge here is kind of some of these listed companies as well, where the executives are, given their incentives based on the sales figures, typically the top line stuff, not necessarily things, further down the P&L. So that's where I think I looked into something once, which said that if you can show somebody how to sell more, then your service is worth X, or a multiple of X, on the value. Whereas if you're saving the money, it's a multiple of Y, and it's always kind of different based on the types of benefits you can bring.
Right. It's always different depending on the industry and how you're presenting it and what you're bringing them, and the aspect on how the person who's obtaining the information is looking at it at the time.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. Do you have any tie-ins or companies that you interact with here in for the U.S. markets, or is everything inside of the U.K., or anybody who's doing kind of side-by-side what you're doing in the U.K. but in the U.S.?
I am aware of some companies in the U.S. I've connected with a few people on LinkedIn, for example, and quite a few of the insurance companies that we partner with here would operate in the U.S. as well. I couldn't, in good consciousness, say, you know, you must speak to X company because... they're really great, because I really don't know that much about them yet. Okay. But I know there are companies who have a kind of a broadly similar model to us that operate in the US.
Okay, Christian, so if the listeners want more information about you, where could they go and get some more info?
So the best place to go is probably the website, which is slipsafety.co.uk. And there they can find out a bit more about who we are, what we do. They can take the scorecard that we mentioned, which is applicable to anybody, and kind of get started down the rabbit hole of slip safety. I'm also very active on LinkedIn, so you could do a search for me there. You and I are connected, Jay, so if people are connected to you, they would see me as a second degree connection. We've got a Twitter as well, which is slip_safety. We had to have two underscores, regrettably, but it works okay.
It's a sign just in case that you can slip. That's what you're trying to really emphasize, that I understand.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of these frustrating things, I guess, when you're setting up a business and thinking of a brand name and stuff nowadays, that you have all these different platforms that you kind of want to be known on or visible on, and having something that can give you consistency across all the platforms. This can be quite tricky.
Absolutely. I can tell you 100%. I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. So we've done the best, we've done the best that we can. I mean, LinkedIn would be a great place for people to access what we're doing, because I pretty much do some content every day on LinkedIn. Whether that's, you know, a photograph of something, just a quick observation, or a video, or something a bit more detailed. And then the website has content more like on a weekly basis, which is a bit more in-depth. So, you know, you might be looking at 1,000-word article every week on the website. And then on LinkedIn, it's kind of, you know, a couple of hundred words here and 30 words there and a few images here and a couple of videos there.
But it's keeping it top of mind, which is the important part when you're trying to get your messaging out. So I think that's a great aspect. And even if it's a picture or a few words, it's still getting the message out in regards... this needs to be important and focused on.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of it is just, you know, an image with something like that a quarter of a million bunches of bananas thing I mentioned earlier, or something, you know, around the hospital statistic. So another one I like to mention is that you're kind of almost 70 times more likely to be in hospital or have an overnight stay in hospital due to a slip than you are due to being an occupant in a car that has an accident, which is kind of staggering if you think about it.
Absolutely.
But it just shows you the scale of the problem. But I think, I don't know, it'd be interesting to get your view as to what the situation is in the US, but I think here there's a bit of a perception issue still, whereby because people aren't typically dying from this accident or typically getting severely hurt, you know, we don't really want people getting hurt, so let's try and do something about it.
Absolutely. Well, Christian, I appreciate you coming on here today on Safety FM.
Pleasure, Jay. Thanks for having me.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
SafetyFM.com.
Are you tired of not being able to reach the people inside of your organization? What if there's a better approach? What if you could contact them in a click of a button? Here at Safety FM, we can assist you reach your team via podcast. How about setting up a private podcast for just you and your team members? We will cover topics that are important to you and your company. Visit safetyfm.com. That's safetyfm.com. And click on services for more information about your own private podcast. Safety FM, a safety-focused moment venture. So do you feel like you're missing out on what everyone is starting to do now, that live streaming thing, and you don't know where to start or what to do? I have the resource and the information to provide to you in regards on how you can stream onto 40 social media platforms all at one time. Yes, that's 440 social media platforms all at one time. All you'll need to do is go to safetyfm.com/one. That's safetyfm.com/one. That's O-N-E. So just in case, and you'll be able to start live streaming just like you're hearing people starting to do right now, up to 40 social media platforms.